And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, and we're missing Bridget Riedel today. I'm not sure where she went. I know she's got some conference that she was going to, so she will not be with us today. But we do have a special guest coming up here a little bit. We've got Tom Grafenauer from the National Weather Service up in Grand Forks, and we're going to be talking about a new experimental model that they're using for winter weather forecasting. So looking forward to that. If you have any questions for us throughout the show, shoot us a call, 701-293-9000. That's 701-293-9000. It's, well, boy, what a difference in temperatures across the area today. In fact, we had some pretty dense fog out there this morning, and that led to, there was a rollover crash on out in west parts of Fargo this morning due to the dense fog, and most of that is burned off, though. We are seeing temperatures currently in the 40s and 50s across the area. Still a few upper 30s out in Lakes Country where that fog kind of has been hanging tight. But other than that, we're looking at a pretty pretty quiet forecast as we head into the upcoming weekend with a storm system passing to our west and northwest. That will give a little bit of snow into the northwestern corner of the state if you have any travel plans going up that way. Other than that, it should be a pretty quiet, which is pretty good news. We're looking at that fog diminishing as we head through the rest of the afternoon. And then we'll have mostly sunny skies or partly cloudy, depending where you're at, with temperatures ranging from the 40s in Lakes Country to about 50 here in the FM area, and mid and upper 50s just to the west of the valley, with those south-southeast winds increasing about 10 to 20. For tonight, we'll see a clear evening, but then we'll see clouds roll in as we head into the overnight hours, and we'll drop down to a low in the upper 30s, and we could see some more patchy fog developing. And then as we head into Saturday, a lot of clouds around and breezy conditions out of the southeast, about 10 to 25, highs in the lower 50s. A cold front will swing through here as we head into Saturday evening or late Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. That could trigger off an isolated light shower or sprinkle favoring the northern valley. And then as we head into Sunday, we're looking at west winds developing. That'll push in some drier weather, and that will also allow our temperatures to remain mild in mid-upper 40s with increasing sunshine. Monday, we'll see clouds increase late in the day, but mild with highs again in the low to mid-50s. And then a very vigorous storm system will ride in out of the southern plains, moving northward, tapping Gulf of Mexico moisture. And that's great news because it looks like much of the eastern third of the state, along with parts of Minnesota, will be under this canopy of rain. And it looks like a wide swath of pretty close to an inch of rain through the eastern third of the state into parts of Minnesota. So that's great news because, again, we've been in drought conditions, and we are looking at finally seeing some much-needed rainfall across the area. Unfortunately, areas out in the western part of the state really not going to see a whole lot out of this. So I wish we had better news for our friends out in the western part of the state. But other than that, it looks like a pretty decent forecast. Now, following that system next week, we do see a push of colder air coming in from Canada. So we might see a little bit of that rain change over to some wet snow before it gets out of here on Wednesday. But highs for the middle and end of next week, they do look pretty chilly with highs dropping back into the 30s. So good news if you're a winter weather lover. We do have colder weather on the way, so hopefully we can start making some ice as we head deeper into the month and into the month of December. But we're noticing that we're starting to see signs of a big pattern flip in terms of October and November so far. We've had above normal temperatures pretty much the entire month and a half. We've seen a couple of stretches of below normal temperatures, but it's only lasted about a day or so, and then we bounce right back. Now we're going to see that reverse, I think, as we finally will see temperatures rounding out the month and starting off December in a either at or below normal regime. So that's good news there. As again, for a lot of these ice anglers, you want to start seeing some of that ice start to form here as we head into the month of December. But again, coming up here in about 5 minutes or so, we will have Tom from the National Weather Service talking about this new experimental model that they're using. And they've already put out their winter forecast based on this model, talking about how many storm systems we're expecting here in the northern plains. And, you know, it's going to be curious to see what Tom has to say because, as most people know, we use the LRC model as our main forecasting tool. There's other things that we use alongside that, but the LRC is kind of that central piece to the puzzle. And the first cycle is not set yet, so we don't know exactly how many storms, at least according to the LRC, that we're going to see as we head into this upcoming winter. So far it's been quiet, but now we're going to start getting a little more active as we head towards the end of the month and the start of December before that cycle sets itself. So I would love to start to compare the two, see if there's any kind of common things that we're both using in terms of this experimental model that the National Weather Service is using and the LRC as well. So, Addison, are you looking for? See, this is new technology that we're going to be using here. What do you think?
I think it's neat.
Yeah,
I think it's really cool.
I mean, anytime, and somebody, I had a couple people email me saying, "Hey, are you worried that this could, you know, replace the LRC or its competition?" And the quick answer to that is no, because you know what? The more information we can get out to the general public that is accurate, the better off that we are. And that's kind of what we're striving for. That's what the Weather Service is striving for. And again, if you have any questions for Tom when we join him in a few minutes here, 701-293-9000. That's 701-293-9000. And don't forget to mark November 27th on your calendar as well. That's the day before Thanksgiving. Coming up on the Jay Thomas Show that day, we will have Gary Lezak on with us, and we will be talking about the LRC and this upcoming winter. Now, the big question is, will the cycle be set by the 27th? That would put us 45 days into the first cycle. And I believe last year when we went on, the cycle was not set yet. So I've had a lot of questions. Hey, you know, if the cycle isn't set by the 27th, how are you going to be able to tell what the rest of the winter holds? Easy answer, the majority, or at least three quarters of that cycle, if it's not set by the 27th, will be three quarters underway. So we'll have a very good handle on exactly what to expect for the upcoming winter. I do see more than likely, I mean, we're already seeing above normal temperatures for the first, what are we, 5 weeks into the LRC cycle? So we'll have more than likely above normal temperatures for the first at least half of the cycle. And now with us going into a colder regime, more than likely that pattern will start to flip and will probably turn colder than normal for the latter part of each cycle. So the big thing is getting the moisture this far north. We've had a few close misses with these storms. We've had a couple hit out to our west. We've had most of them, and Gary will be talking about this. We look where anchor troughs and ridges are. So ridges are areas of high pressure. Troughs are those big areas of low pressure. And the anchor trough has been off to our east and south for this most of this last month, where these storm systems have been going through the central and southern plains up into the Great Lakes. That has been where the anchor trough is. And unless that changes, it looks like that's where the majority of some of these storms are going to be heading as we head into the upcoming season. Typically, your jet stream will sag a little further south as we head deeper into the season. So if there's any systems that just missed us to the south for the fall, more than likely, and not all the time, but more than likely, as the jet stream strengthens, those systems will be pulled a little bit further south. So, but from what it looks like right now, the central plains into the Great Lakes, favoring a above normal snowy winter, at least the way it looks now. And again, that could change for the second half of the cycle as it starts to develop here over the next couple of weeks. So again, I think these next few weeks, as we undergo a pattern change, will be a big tail on how much snow we get up here for the upcoming winter. We'll see how it all pans out. But we're going to take a quick break now. Again, after the break, we'll have Tom Graffenauer. Tom, I hope I pronounced your name right. But we'll be talking with Tom from the National Weather Service in Grand Forks. And again, if you have any questions for us, give us a call, 701-293-9000. Again, that's a Red Wing Shoe Line at 701-293-9000. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us on this, At least here in the FM area, sunny afternoon. Still some clouds, or fog, I should say, hanging out in the far southern valley and in the parts of Lakes Country. So we got a special guest today, and he's with the National Weather Service in Grand Forks. Tom, I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Grafenauer?
You got it right, yep.
All right, fantastic. First off, if anybody's watching us on live stream, is that a Chicago Bears logo hanging in the background there?
We got Bears in the background. I think Kansas City Royals and Wisconsin Badgers. So I grew up in southeast Wisconsin and, you know, moved here when I was 26. It was a tough childhood growing up in Wisconsin.
I bet.
Being a Bears fan.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So why don't you give a little background about yourself, Tom? You work for the National Weather Service up in Grand Forks.
Yep, that is correct. My official title is Science and Operations Officer. For short, most people just say I'm the SOO at the Weather Service office in Grand Forks. Basically, my area that I focus on is training our forecasters, making sure that they have the tools they need to succeed and do their jobs to the best of their abilities, and also kind of bring in new technology, new tools, and apply that to the forecast process, and especially how we message our forecast so the best decisions are being made on the information that we're presenting.
Gotcha. And so your career, where'd you start out at, and how long have you been up in Grand Forks?
Right. So I'm kind of an oddity within the National Weather Service. Typically, you get into the government or get into the Weather Service anywhere you can, and through promotions, you move closer to where you want to spend the rest of your life. So this office was actually my first job 22 years ago, back in 2002. And I've, through promotions, worked my way up here just within this one office, which is an oddity. But, you know, the idea was to move back closer to Wisconsin, but I met my wife here when I was obviously in my 20s, and she grew up in Grand Forks, and, you know, we have kids that are now entrenched in high school and things like that. So it's a lot harder to move away from the area, and we do like it here.
Awesome.
And things like that.
Well, you've got to like the cold weather and snow and ice if you're living up here, that's for sure.
For sure. Winter weather is one of my favorite types of weather to forecast, for sure.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I grew up outside of Chicago, and I remember significantly the blizzard of 79 that hit, and it was after that where that solidified my decision that I'm going to go into being a meteorologist, because I was always wondering, man, how does something this bad happen? And it was I think growing up anywhere in the Midwest, you got to be fascinated with weather. And I was reading an article talking about this new experimental model. And that's why I reached out to you, the National Weather Service in Grand Forks. And I believe you're the only office that's using this model to forecast winter weather. Is that correct? Is Grand Forks the only office using this?
This type of specific messaging, yes. We're kind of trying to prototype the idea for, you know, this type of a forecast.
Okay, explain this model and how it works compared to some of the other weather models that we use to forecast the weather.
Sure, and hopefully, like, this is not my area of expertise, but I think maybe that will be better to try to explain this as well, to try to make it explainable for most people.
Sure.
I will say that a focused effort of the entire weather enterprise is moving away from deterministic messaging more toward probabilistic type messaging. Social science research that has come out over the last 2, 3, 4 years, majority of that type of research really shows that probabilistic messaging, better decisions are made based on probabilistic messaging compared to deterministic type forecasts. And
explain the difference. Explain the difference between those two for people that don't know the difference between the two.
Yeah, couple examples. I assume majority of this region are Vikings fans. I know my family is mainly Vikings fans. So I could say, who are the Vikings playing this upcoming week? I'm not even quite sure. Is it the? Yeah, I'm not sure. Let's say the Vikings.
Edison, who are the Vikings playing this week?
You've asked the wrong question. Yeah, that's the wrong question.
Sorry, buddy.
All right. Well, let's say the Vikings are playing the 49ers this upcoming week.
Okay.
Deterministic forecast would be the Vikings are going to beat the 49ers 24-20. So that's pretty specific, right? And
right.
That forecast could change from day to day. Let's apply it to the weather enterprise. For the storm next week that's coming, and we're trying to forecast, say, how much snow is going to happen. Deterministic forecast would be there's going to be 6.5 inches of snow at some point next week. Whereas a probabilistic forecast would be saying something like there's a 55% chance that the Vikings are going to beat the 49ers this upcoming Sunday. Or in the weather world, probabilistic forecast can be a variety of different ways. I could say, there's a 60% chance for more than 6 inches of snow next week, or I could give a range of potential scenarios, right? So I could say there is 3 to 9 inches of snow expected at some point next week. So really probabilistic messaging and a probabilistic forecast can include numbers. It can include probabilities. But the most, I think, effective type of probabilistic messaging really is forecasting more scenario type-based. So here is a scenario that could happen, the probability for that scenario to happen. But here's this other scenario that could happen as well. And really trying to explain the uncertainty of why different scenarios exist. Because I think when I make a decision or think about any decision that you've made in life, when you have context behind that decision you're making, or if you know why uncertainty exists, a better decision is probably going to be made with that information. So again, probabilistic forecasting, not really just like throwing a bunch of numbers at the wall. It's really up to us. And especially we know that a lot of people are not numerate, right? It's really hard to understand numbers, but to make a message that is still probabilistic scenario based, but that's going to be understandable and really try to paint that picture in your mind of how each scenario may unfold, so that you can kind of mental time travel into the future and visualize how each scenario may unfold and what actions you may need to take based on that information.
Right. And I think a lot of the general public, they want to know, A, is it going to snow, and B, how much? And I just don't think that they realize how difficult. I think forecasting snow is probably one of the more difficult tasks that we have, because it can vary so much over a small area, and to be able to pinpoint exactly how much snow falls, where when it rains, people don't care. I mean, we get a half inch to an inch of rain, no big deal. But if you translate that into snow, that could be anywhere from just a nuisance snow to we're in big trouble in terms of travel. So that's what makes a big difference. So this new model, that you guys are using, does it incorporate any of the other models, like using the American or the European, or this is a standalone model? And why do they pick Grand Forks to, I mean, obviously we're far north, we have a lot of winter weather, but how was Grand Forks site chosen for this as well?
Yeah, great questions. So I'll say that the outlook or the kind of model that we've developed, and I'm not quite sure if we would call it a model or not. It's a machine learning based approach that is calculated considering a number of factors, including kind of the large scale circulations, climate trends, and then looking back at verified impacts from past years, and then kind of performing calculations based on that using machine learning techniques. We do not use any existing numerical models such as the GFS or the GEFS or the European. None of that is used in this calculation. And really, machine learning, just as a general overview of machine learning, you know, as humans, our brains calculate pretty slowly, right? So, we could try to make all of these connections based on large-scale patterns, climate trends, and what happened in the past, and try to connect all those dots together. And really what machine learning is doing that in a really, really quick way, trying to identify patterns and what has resulted from those patterns, trying to train what we call a machine learning program. And the most important part, I think, of a machine learning type program is really training the initial data set. If you don't train it correctly, it's going to give you bad results. If you do train it correctly, you know, you will get good probabilistic type forecasts out of it. So a lot of effort has to be done in the training of the initial data set. And that's something that, you know, quite honestly, we're still working through and hoping we did right, but we're going to have to learn. And that's why we're still calling it kind of experimental or prototype. I will say it started. We have a forecaster here at our office that is really interested in machine learning. This is our site wasn't picked or chosen. We're just playing with this kind of prototype approach to see if it does add any value to the typical climate outlooks that are out there. And if it does, it may expand. If not, we'll have to go back to the drawing board. But, you know, so far, we'll kind of see how this winter unfolds.
Right. And this is the first year that you've been using this, correct?
That is correct.
Okay,
yes.
Great. All right. Well, Tom, stay with us here. We've got a bottom of the hour break. If you have any questions for Tom, feel free to shoot us a call, 701-293-9000. Again, that's 701-293-9000. When we come back, got a few more questions for Tom, and we'll also ask him what are his thoughts on this upcoming winter? What does it look like for our area? We'll have that and more coming up in just a bit. And welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus, 1:36 in the afternoon. I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon on, at least a halfway decent day here in the FM area with plenty of sunshine. We are visiting here with Tom Graffenauer from the National Weather Service in Grand Forks. We've been talking about this experimental model that they've been using up in Grand Forks for winter forecasting. And Tom, we had an email question from one of our listeners. He said, you had mentioned machine learning model. That's what this is. Does this incorporate AI?
Not generative AI. So I'm still trying to wrap my brain around all this new technology that's coming out. Mm-hmm. However, machine learning and AI are very, very similar. And I think a lot of when people hear AI, they're probably thinking about things such as ChatGPT or Microsoft, whatever their version of AI is, or Google Gemini. I think what a lot of people are thinking about is more the generative AI, where you know you can chat with a bot and it kind of interacts with you like a human would interact with you. This is something not generative AI, so it's not really like ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. It's more of a system that's doing a lot of calculations for you and trying to connect a lot of those dots and patterns in a neural network type approach.
Excellent. Now, do you think this is going to be the future of weather forecasting, more of a machine learning?
I do. So machine learning can do, like I said, a lot of calculations in a short amount of time. So our current numerical models are just like what they sound like. They're numerical models. They do a lot of numerical calculations, but not in maybe the smartest way possible. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they take a longer time to run. There are experiments going on with kind of that machine learning or AI approach to running like the shorter term weather models that can do a lot of those calculations in a short amount of time, which means, you know, a lot of our forecasting and information that we gather is what we call from ensemble systems. So you may have like 100 member ensemble system and you tweak little parts of it to try to understand what the full envelope of solutions are. But it takes a really long time to run, and you probably, a lot of our ensemble systems today are under dispersive because of that, or they don't capture the full range of what is possible. They don't capture every potential scenario. So what AI or machine learning in the future is probably going to do for us is allow us to run a larger number of or ensemble systems with a larger number of members. And you know, today you could probably run a 50 member ensemble system in, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours, maybe a little bit longer, where hopefully in the future we'd be able to run like 1,000 member ensemble in 10 or 15 minutes. So that's really the power, I think, of the machine learning approach to weather modeling is being able to, you know, if it can do it as accurately, which current indications are that it can, to do things in with less computational power and get more information out of it.
Right. Now, is this model, so we use, and I don't know how familiar you are with the LRC model. This is something that Gary Lezak, meteorologist retired now from Kansas City, developed, and I was introduced to this about, 10 years ago or so, and we introduced that up here to the Northern Plains when I came up here, and I'll tell you what, the accuracy rate on this model, once this cycle, because the LRC bases, it's the centerpiece of the atmospheric puzzle is how Gary puts it. There's numerous things that we use besides the LRC, but that's kind of the central piece. And I'll tell you what, watching the accuracy of that model, Gary predicted the Hurricane Helene that hit Tampa Bay all the way last March, and he predicted it within a day. I mean, any model that is going to be that accurate is to me is just absolutely amazing. And it kind of goes, again, like a cycling pattern, where there's certain patterns that set up in the fall and early winter, and they continue to cycle through the rest of the winter and upcoming spring. And over the last 10 years, he's figured that his accuracy rate 6-7 months out is about 70%, and even more accurate on a shorter term. What is your take? I mean, do you know enough about the LRC, and what is your take on that? Because we've introduced it to numerous meteorologists. Some buy into it, and some think it's just absolute garbage. That it's just like throwing darts at a dartboard. So, which we're used to hearing that anyway. That or the magic eight ball. You know all the one liners. But what are your thoughts on the LRC?
Yeah, so I think it does have some validity to it. I think you can, at least in a general sense, try to get an idea of what the upcoming pattern is going to be just because of how things cycle. You can follow like an upper level wave around the Earth and try to estimate when it's, you know, going to affect your location again. So I think it does have some validity to it. I think if it's proven to be better than, you know, 50-50, obviously it's better than probably climatology, and it's going to be able to provide some useful information. I think a lot of what we do and, you know, the models that we look at or the type of information that we're trying to message, what we use is probably dependent on what we're trying to message or the information that we're trying to provide, right? So if what the information of the LRC is providing you is what you need to know, then it's probably something that's going to be really, really useful for you. I will say that we developed this machine learning-based approach because we wanted to try to provide other information than what maybe a typical winter seasonal outlook could provide, which is usually, are you going to be above or below normal temperature, and are you going to be above and below normal precipitation? And how much above and below normal, right? That's kind of the typical winter season forecast.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of what the Weather Service does is really trying to work with what we call our core partners, like emergency managers, school superintendents, health partners, agencies that are out there, maybe a little bit Department of Transportation, law enforcement, and, you know, try to provide them information that they're going to be able to use to make the best decisions possible. The mission of the Weather Service is not to give out the long mission, but the shortened version of our mission is protection of life and property. Mm-hmm. And we really feel that by working through our core partners that I listed, we're really going to, like, the return on the investment of the time and effort that we're putting into our messaging and forecast, that return on investment to protect life and property is going to be much, much greater than if we're out there trying to get every person to, you know, take action based on the message that we're providing. So the idea behind this local model for us was to try to downscale or provide additional information for a seasonal outlook that maybe a core partner could use for not only awareness, but for planning purposes moving into the next winter season. I'm not quite sure if this is going to be useful, and that's the reason we really need to continue building relationships with our partners in order to know what type of information is going to be useful for them. One thing we've heard is, like, maybe you know, if you're trying to make a decision of canceling an activity or canceling school for the day, and it's a, you know, there's going to be a really busy winter that you're going to have to make a lot of decisions down the road, you know, based for school closures or whatever, you know, it, to know or be aware of how active a winter is going to be could influence the decisions that you're making in the heat of the battle, right? Or
right.
I'm sure there's a variety of other types of decisions that could be made based on, you know, kind of providing additional information above what above or below normal temperature precip can provide.
Okay. Now, based on this machine learning model that you guys are using, you have put together a winter forecast for our area, correct?
We have. So what we are messaging through this machine learning forecast is the number of major winter events or blizzards for the period of November through March. So that, what is it, five-month period. Mm-hmm. The way that we've trained the model and the data set is it needs to impact greater than 50% of our area. And our forecast area is eastern North Dakota, northwest and west central Minnesota. So that's kind of the area that we've trained it to. And in order to count as a major winter storm or blizzard, it has to affect at least half of our area. And there has to have a duration component as well. So like longer than 6 or 12 hours. It can't just be like it hits for an hour and then it's gone.
Right.
So it's a larger coverage, longer duration type winter event that, you know, is typically that type of event that, you know, is going to definitely affect travel, bring considerable disruptions to life, maybe things such as road closures, school closures, impossible travel and things like that. So that's kind of what we're talking about with, you know, the number of major winter storms, blizzards. Typically on average each year, you know, we have 2 to 3 types of these events across our region within a winter season.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of what we're looking at is a pretty high probability, you know, probably at least I won't give an exact number, but, you know, kind of the expected number of major winter storms or blizzards this year, we're looking at 5 to 7. So,
wow, above normal.
Just a little bit above normal for a winter season.
And what's that? Are you basing that on climatology? I mean, I know you had mentioned like past patterns using teleconnections, stuff like that. Why such a more active season are you anticipating this winter compared to last winter?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's something we have not dug out of the information yet as to exactly why that's happening or why that may be. And that's something that I would need to get a climate expert here for.
Okay.
But I do believe that like the La Nina type pattern is setting up that mm-hmm. typically does provide a little bit more activity than normal. So like last year, it was El Nino. Right. Which typically lead to warmer, drier type seasons. And now we've transitioned to a weaker La Nina, which typically leads to wetter and colder type seasons across our area. There are fluctuations that can happen and things like that to be aware of. But, you know, I think what is setting the stage is just looking at those teleconnections and the larger scale pattern that currently is happening and leading up to this. And the probabilities for activity that happens for the months after that based on what has led up to this current point in time.
Interesting. So a colder and snowier winter is what this machine learning model is forecasting.
Well, that's what CPC, the Climate Prediction Center, is forecasting just based on the upcoming La Nina season.
Right.
And then we've kind of downscaled it, but what the output from what we're seeing from our machine learning approach is matching that of the Climate Prediction Center in a sense. It's just providing that additional information to, okay, what does that mean for me? Oh, that means maybe more major winter storms than normal. And we do have some timing information as well. The probabilities are really, really low in November, which we've seen,
yeah,
obviously.
Right. Yeah.
but, you know, the probabilities increase substantially for the months of December and January, where each month, you know, the probabilities indicate maybe 1 to 3 major winter storms, you know, each of those months, a little lower probabilities in February, and then maybe another potentially active March after that.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll compare notes then. Once we'll compare notes at the end of the season, because we haven't finished our LRC outlook yet. And I mean, it's been starting out well above normal, and I think that's what a lot of people are trying to grasp onto. This has been basically a record warm start to fall, and you know, it's hard to see that just totally flip flopping as we head into winter. But again, we are going into a weak La Nina, and that's usually one of the signs of a colder than normal winter. And we're starting now to finally see signs of a pattern change here as we head towards the end of the month. So for all the winter weather lovers, that's good news for them. That's absolutely good news.
Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt.
And I would say just one last thing.
Sure.
Once you do get your model set and the information provided, please stay in touch. I'd love to see how you're using that to develop a message and what that message is just based on that information from the LRC.
Sure. We'll tell you what, Tom, on November 27th, mark your calendar. We will be having Gary Lezak on the air from 2 o'clock through 5 o'clock. And we'll be talking about the LRC and what to expect here in the Northern Plains for the upcoming winter. Even if the cycle has not been fully set by the 27th, we should have a pretty decent handle on what most of the winter holds. So we're still kind of putting that together. But, yeah, I'll definitely shoot you an email and let you know. But, Tom, I wanted to thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Again, anytime we can get better information out to the public to help with travel plans and anything involving winter weather. A lot of people think that it's a competition, but it's really not. I mean, we try and get the best information, both the weather service, private sector, media. We all try and get the best information possible out to the general public. So, boy, I'll tell you what, if this machine learning model ends up being accurate over this upcoming winter, that's even better news. So keep up the good work in Grand Forks, and we appreciate you being on with us.
Yep, thank you for having me.
All right, thanks again, Tom. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We'll do a final recap of the weather, let you know what this weekend looks like, and we'll talk a little bit more about the upcoming storm for next week. Don't go anywhere. Well, we had to get one screaming goat in with Bridget not here, and you know, that's for Steve to help him have a good weekend. So I want to welcome you back to Weather and Ag in Focus, 1:56 in the afternoon. We got a couple minutes left, so I want to run down the forecast real quick for you if you didn't get it earlier. We do have a storm system that's heading our way as we head into the early part of next week and the middle part of next week, but we've got some pretty decent weather for the rest of the afternoon. Partly cloudy skies throughout the area with temperatures currently in the 30s and 40s. Now it's about upper 30s to near 40 down around the Wahpeton area. We're in the mid-40s to upper 40s across the rest of the area, although there are some 50s scattered in, upper 50s at that, from Mayville down towards Edgeley. And those areas could top out right around 60. I think we'll be right around the 50-degree mark here in the FM area, a little cooler in the far southern valley with those south-southeast winds about 10 to 15. Tonight we'll start off with clear skies. Could see some patchy fog redeveloping towards midnight if you're out and about tonight. Lows down into the upper 30s, south-southeast winds 10 to 25 tonight. And those clouds will be with us most of the day tomorrow. It will be breezy, southeast winds 10 to 25, with highs in the low 50s tomorrow. Mild start to your weekend. And then we'll see a cool front hit tomorrow evening. That'll switch our winds into the west for Sunday. Could see a sprinkle or two as that cold front passes by. And Sunday a little cooler, but nothing cold, with highs in the mid to upper 40s. We'll briefly warm up Monday into the 50s again with increasing clouds as that system approaches from the south. And we're getting some pretty strong indications that Monday night into Tuesday, widespread rains throughout the area. The eastern third of the state into most of Minnesota, picking up at least an inch of rain, if not a little bit more. The further west you go in the state, unfortunately, those are the areas that need it pretty bad as well. They're not going to see much rain at all out of the system coming up Tuesday and Wednesday. Behind that system, as winds shift to the northwest on Wednesday, much colder weather, and we could mix in a few snow showers, but no big snows. But I do see a push of even colder weather. So after that system departs next week, we'll be in the 30s for highs, which is a little closer to normal. And then as we head towards Thanksgiving week, and into the end of the month, it does look like we're going to see some much colder weather pour in from Canada, as Tom was kind of hinting at, that there is a pattern change undergoing. And although November has been quiet, he said December and January look pretty active around the area. So we'll see how that model handles it compared to our LRC model. And again, November 27th, mark that on your calendar. That's when we'll have our LRC special. So I want to thank everybody for joining us on Weather and Ag in Focus, the best of the Jay Thomas Show. Actually, no, we've got a football game coming up, don't we, Addison? A little bit of Jay Thomas and then the football game shortly afterwards. So have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.